Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. Good morning, Fatima. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing really well. How are you?
Exceptional and getting better every day. Every day I try.
That's great.
Yeah. We have an exciting topic today. I'm excited. You know, what can I tell you? You're excited because this is what you do for a living, and you help so many people in so many different areas of their lives.
Yes.
Before we get into that, I want to know you. I want to know more about you. Who are you? How did you become the person you are today? But I want to go way deeper into your childhood. What was it like when you were 5, 6, 7? What were your thoughts? Who influenced you? Who were the people in your life back then? And then as you got to be a teenager and a young adult, who were those other people, or were they the same people who influenced you then?
Well, I had a pretty crazy childhood in that I moved every year from when I was age 6 to when I was age 14. And I kept moving after that, but not quite every year. So I lived in Saudi Arabia. I lived in India. Later, as an adult, I lived in Pakistan. I lived all over California. It's funny because I haven't traveled much within the United States, but internationally I have. So I think one of the biggest influences that I had growing up was when I was in high school, I had a phenomenal debate coach. Mm-hmm. And I went to a school whose debate team was very underfunded. In fact, it wasn't even a proper class. It was just a bunch of kids hanging out after school 2 days a week. And this guy, this lawyer, he paid for everything for us.
Wow.
He was just such a great person. Shout out to Einar Johnson. If you're listening, I'm going to be having lunch with him soon, hopefully. We're still in touch. He's still a wonderful mentor. And he has taught me so much about communication, articulating yourself very cohesively, understanding who your audience is and making sure you're speaking to them specifically. And I really credit a lot of the work that I do, the foundational philosophies, to what he taught me back in high school.
Wow, that's pretty cool. For somebody to just come in and step in and fund a program like that, that's huge.
That is huge.
That's really believing in our future, right? If you will.
Yeah. He was such an exceptional person. I believe he was very religious. He was a Mormon. I mean, he's still a Mormon. He's still around. But he let his faith dictate a lot of, you know, his personal philosophies and stuff. And I thought that was really remarkable. I'm not Mormon, but I really respect people who, you know, they have very strong philosophies and faiths and they use that to dictate their lives. And he had a lot of integrity and I really appreciated that about him.
Integrity. That's huge.
Yeah.
How many people do you know who have integrity? Daniel, how are you, buddy? Sounds like an amazing teacher and mentor. Absolutely.
Yeah. He was great.
Yeah. So who would you say you moved a lot?
I did. Yeah.
But you didn't tell us why.
I don't really know why we moved so much. I think my parents were just trying to figure it out. I moved to the United States, obviously, first. But we had to move first to India, being Indian citizens, to get our green card papers and everything in order. So I studied in India for a couple of years. That was a very very good experience. I really enjoyed that experience because it gave me the opportunity to learn a lot of new languages that I've kept in touch with. Mm-hmm. India is the home to many, many languages. So there's different ethnicities in India and there's like racial divides and stuff. It's a very, very diverse community. So that was a very good experience. It really helped me. There's so many benefits to learning a lot of languages, right? So that was a really good experience. I love that. And also the work ethic that's taught in Indian schools is a little bit different from what's taught here. It's not better because there's a lot of students that are definitely left behind, you know, students that don't do well in that traditional academic setting. But it teaches you this sort of crazy work ethic from a very young age. Retrospectively, it's a little toxic, but you know what? There are some benefits to it. So I benefited from that greatly, yeah.
What would you say were the differences from learning in India? And you said it was a different method of learning or even being taught compared to the U.S.
I mean, it was frankly really shady, like looking back. Really? I remember when I was in the second grade, my brother was in nursery school. That's where kids go when they're like three. And kids would like pee themselves. People wouldn't clean up after them. Like, it was really shady. Wow. Yeah. Teachers would like, they would be allowed to use corporal punishment. So we would get punished if we did something that we weren't supposed to. But positives were that there was a lot of focus on just the discipline of learning, you know, just focusing on studying and memorizing things. And that wasn't so much what I benefited from. Like, rote learning is not something I think people are like, oh yeah, I love that. That made me who I am. I think what made me who I am was the environment. It's very competitive, you know, and academic success is something that's seen with a lot of respect. People respect you a lot if you get good grades. The social hierarchy is built such that the nerds are like the ones on top. India's wild. India's wild for sure.
Is it really? But when was the last time you were there?
I was there last year. Yeah, this year actually. Well, it's 2023 now. So I was there in January of 2022. Yeah. Mm.
And what was it? Did you see any differences?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm from Hyderabad and there's like no trees anymore. Like, it's so dense and it's so crowded. I'm from Old City. So that's the heart of, you know, the city, and it's very crowded. You know, crazy traffic jams are so normal. And like, I kept getting sick because it's so dusty and polluted. But in terms of like the people and the culture, it's definitely changed, I think, to be a lot more flexible and accepting. I think some of the stigmas and the ways of othering people that existed when I was a kid, those are definitely loosening up, especially as people who are younger than me and more woke are speaking up and having a platform. I'm really optimistic about the youth of the world. So I think they're going to do a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of people, they're not sure where our world is going because of technology, if you will, right? Technology has hindered, but it also has helped us progress so much more than if we didn't have it. But it has put some people at... I was talking to a gentleman on my show, and he lived in Japan. And in Japan, there's these people who basically put themselves in a room from teenagers and never leave their room. And they're in their 40s and 50s now. And they still live at home with mom and dad. And what's going to happen to these people once they... Maybe they have internet jobs, right? Or maybe they don't even work because their parents sustain them and all they do is play Xbox all day. And he said it's a huge problem because some of the parents are dying off and you have all these adults who really don't know how to live in society. So there's this craziness that's going on in our world all over, different cultures, different ways of looking at progress, you know, right. moving forward, right?
So, right.
Scary.
It's scary, but I'm also very optimistic. Yes, I know people likewise. Say that online, like there's a lot of echo chambers so that if you have like kind of a bad idea, you'll find people who also have those bad ideas and you'll be in this echo chamber. And I get it. I see that. But I think there's a lot of a lot more access to knowledge, a lot more access to if you're a go-getter and you want to make something of yourselves. I think the world is a lot more democratic now. Like you're not going to be restricted from a whole lot of knowledge and a whole lot of resources because there's things like YouTube and Wikipedia. And if there's so many different mechanisms now to learn that weren't around when we were kids,
right?
So I think that's really, it's something that, There's so much online, but if you have the discipline to focus on the things that are helping you grow, then you'll come out of all of this as a better person. And I think a lot of people are doing that. So yeah. I'm optimistic.
Yeah. You know, one of the things you talked about, two very important platforms that do create a lot of content. There is a lot of content out there, but also as young adults or even anybody, you know, you can't believe everything, right? You have to basically study and research and then compare them and then get the best stuff out of it, right? So you definitely do your due diligence.
Definitely. Yeah.
So you landed in California.
Yeah.
You're in California now.
Yeah.
But you stayed as an adult.
I did. I love it here.
Why?
I think especially the place where I live, I think everyone is so motivated and they're such a go-getter and they don't have this mentality like, oh no, society is just like this. So this is what it is. And I think that's a really nice way of thinking too. I think if you just want to have a very kind of stable life with your family and you just want to have a huge social circle and have that kind of family support, having that kind of mentality is really helpful for navigating the situations that come out. Like when you're living in a joint family in India, like some of my first cousins are doing, you have to have this kind of thought process in order to survive. And there are so many benefits to living like that. Mm-hmm. Me, on the other hand, that's not the kind of lifestyle I like. I am very, very independent and entrepreneurial, obviously. So I like being around people like that. I love my clients. A lot of my clients are based out of California. These are people who are movers and shakers in their space. They're doing such interesting stuff. I recently worked with this woman who she is a very high up there, you know, HR person. And she was asked to do this analysis of this hospital to assess why there was such a big wage gap between men and women. And then she did an analysis and she was like, well, if we, you know, account for the fact that there's more female nurses and more male nurses, the wage gap is only about 8%. And the reason that's happening is because the overtime schedules that you're allowing people to have clash with a lot of these women's child rearing duties. So they were just able to make one policy to make the overtime more flexible, and suddenly the wage gap is closed. So, I mean, these are the kinds of people. They're not like, oh, this is just how society is.
They're looking to make changes.
My clients are the kinds of people. Yeah, my clients are the kinds of people that are like, let's dig into this. What can we control? And I love that. I think you get a concentration of those people in California or like in any large metropolis type of place, right? So I really love that energy. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. Game changers, for sure. So what made you, because you are a resume master, right? Uh-huh. You help people with their resumes, how to put their, if you will, their story on one page.
Right.
Because when we think about it, our stories can take books and books and books and books.
Absolutely.
But you help them understand the value and the wording, right? So you are a professional wordsmith, if you will, mm-hmm. right? Because it's the words that are going to take somebody's resume from the bottom of the pile to the top of the pile.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So that's why people hire you, right?
That is why people hire me. Yeah. And among other things, I do interview coaching. I help people with negotiating their salaries. I help people figure out why they're not getting promoted or why they're potentially stuck in one income bracket. Basically, I help people find better paying or more fulfilling jobs. That might not always mean salary. That might mean a different career path. But yeah, that's what I do. I love it.
That's beautiful. When we think about, you talked about people not even getting the salary they deserve. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's because they're afraid to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I was just having this conversation with my colleagues too, where we were talking about, you know, who our favorite clients are and what makes them different. And I think when we think about our salaries, it's really easy to conflate our self-worth with that. And that's why I think most people are like, yeah, I'm comfortable with a 20% increase, because they're like, as a person, I can only grow that much. Mm. But some of our clients have doubled their pays or more, because I think the process of doubling your pay kind of puts your ego into chaos, because you're like, whoa, suddenly I'm making $200,000 a year. Like, am I worthy of that? It's difficult to demand that. And when all you've known, let's say, is like $100,000, going in and being like, I'd like $200,000 for this job, that's a very scary thing to do. But our clients are the kinds of people who are like, no, I've seen others do this, and I know I'm just as smart as they are.
Right, exactly.
So those are the kinds of clients that I think are very successful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things when I used to do, I used to be in the architectural interior design business, and I would move from one job to the other. I would ask a crazy amount of money, and they would say to me, well, why are you worth this? And then I would show them my work, and then they would give it to me.
Yeah.
And that's it. So you have to be able to stand behind what you believe, right?
Yes.
And so my thank God I had a big portfolio. I used to bring my drawings with me. And sometimes some people were like, you really did this? And I'm like, yes. Are you sure? I'm like, would you like me to draw something for you? So
my mom helped me.
Yes, my mom helped me with these drawings, which actually she could have. But here's the thing. We have to not only be able to have an amazing resume, but we have to be able to back it up in order to ask for that type of money, right?
Yeah, I think what you said is something profound. You said you have to stand up for what you believe. Well, you got to have that belief first, right? Yeah. You got to be like, look, I can do more than this. And that belief has to be honest. Like, you can't just be like, yeah, I want like a $300,000 job, because why not? You actually have to have the sort of professional integrity to command that, right? And if you're underpaid, that's a different thing. But once you have that belief, and if it's a true belief, then you can back up your claims. And I really like, you know, architects and designers, they have portfolios, but having a portfolio is not limited to the design space. No, you can have a phenomenal portfolio, even if you're a teacher or if you're a salesperson, printing out some of your biggest wins, having little annotations showing what you did, taking that with you to an interview, or if you're having a virtual interview, stopping them for a minute and being like, hey, you know, I saw in your job description that you guys are looking for someone who's going to build out your sales roadmap. I just wanted to show you a quick little PowerPoint of a time when I did that and the successes we were able to achieve. And now you have it in and you can show your portfolio. So these are the kinds of things you have to take control of, that conversation. You have to show people the value that you can bring, just like you did. And then you'll be able to command a higher salary. So belief and then that proof. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So how important is it, and I know how important it is, but let me rephrase it this way. anytime I've ever been on an interview, I'm not the one that's doing the being interviewed. Mm-hmm. I'm interviewing them. Why should I work for you? What are you guys going to do for me? Right. And a lot of people, I think that they go in an interview and they're like, oh my God, I hope and I pray that they'll take me. Mm-hmm. And the other way, what I've even told some of my clients is like, they're lucky to have you. Mm-hmm. Go find out if you're even want to work for this company, if you value them enough to even say, I want to spend some time with you guys. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I think there's definitely ways of appearing a little bit more collaborative than like, hey, sell yourself to me, you know?
No, of course.
I think some of the questions that you can ask to make sure that you're having a proper conversation about your strengths rather than, oh, you don't have this skill, I guess we're going to pay you 10 grand less. Some of the questions that you can ask to prevent those kinds of discussions are like, tell me about why you're hiring. You know, why is there an opening for this position? What are some of the things that you would say a successful candidate will have to achieve within 3 months of being hired here or 6 months of being hired here? Questions like, what are some of the business problems that you're hoping to resolve? And obviously you want to contextualize this to your industry, right? So like if you're a teacher, again, you can be like, how, you know, tell me a little bit about the test scores and what are some of the programs that you guys have rolled out to improve test scores? Right. Something like that.
What would you say if you asked them why, not only, you know, why are you looking for this position and what happened to the last person?
I think that's a good question. But I think there's like a more strategic way of wording that. I think just why
that's
is there
why I'm asking you.
I think simply asking, you know, why is there an opening or what are you trying to achieve with this role? And what has my predecessor been able to achieve kind of helps you understand what the backstory is of why they're hiring, whether the other person left within 3 months, that's a red flag. You know, why did they do that? If you ask that question, they're like, we're hiring because we couldn't keep the last person. You can be like, oh, that's interesting. Like, is turnover an issue that you guys are experiencing frequently? And I think if you are, you know, like especially the type of person who would be able to control those things, like let's say you're going in as an HR manager, that is a very obvious question to ask. Like, is turnover a problem that you're having? Because that's something that you can come in and fix. Mm-hmm. If it's not, you kind of have to be a little bit careful about pointing too many fingers because, and this is something that I've run into a lot is a lot of people when they're interviewing, they don't understand the other person's ego, right? For example, I worked with this client recently who wanted to transition into software sales and his background was in mortgage sales. And when they were asking him about his experience in software sales, basically he was like, oh yeah, I'll learn it fast. I'm a fast learner. And that clashes with the interviewer's ego because they're in that space and they're like, dude, I had to work hard to like get to where I am. Like, how could you just pretend like it's easy? And instead kind of paying a little bit more respect to that by being like, you know, I've been fascinated with software sales pretty much since the beginning of my career. I know my resume looks like I've been focusing a lot on mortgage, but in each experience, we did work with software and I have been taking these courses to close any technical gaps that I may have, et cetera. That's like a little bit more respecting the other person's ego and showing that you're a very likable person to work with. I think there's ways to kind of be really charming and strategic about how you present yourself, but still holding back internally and being like, I don't know about these guys, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think there's an art to doing that and having someone who can objectively give you feedback and say like, hey, you sound like, you know, you can be a little bit more respectful to this industry. That's very like, that's not a like polite thing that an interviewer will ever tell you. Like an interviewer will never give you that kind of feedback. So someone who's like outside that, who's objective can. You know what I mean?
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
So you also help people create their virtual profiles, if you will, right?
I do.
And how important is that for someone whether they're looking for a job or even if they're happy at their job? How important is that?
I think if you're happy at your job, I would say it's somewhat important because it's just a great way to kind of log everything so you don't forget it. I don't know if you're like me, but if you are, when it's time to update your resume, you're like, ah, what have I even done with my life? Like, you don't remember anything. I think having kind of some, like an online space where you're logging everything and just revisiting it like once per quarter is really important. Even if it doesn't look very nice, when it's time for you to look for a job, you can quickly clean it up and, you know, kind of carry those changes over to your resume as well. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, when you are a passive candidate, when you're not actively looking for jobs, you're much likelier to get a better offer. If you're like desperate for work and you're trying to get a job ASAP, it's a little bit more challenging because you're going to be asked questions like, well, why are you unemployed? You know, like what happened at your last job, versus if you're already at a workplace and you're successful and you're getting success after success, you are going to be a much more attractive candidate. So you never know, like your dream job might be around the corner, even if you're quite happy where you are. I think it's just really important to keep interviewing. As an example, my dad's been working at the same place for like 20 years, but he still interviews like every few months because it helps him understand what credentials are hot in the market. And, you know, just how to keep updating himself. So just be like my dad. As for the rest of the people who are actively looking, I mean, more than 95% of recruiters are using LinkedIn. If you are not active on LinkedIn, you give the impression that you are technology averse, that you're a little bit maybe on, you know, on the older side. I mean, that's ageist and it's unfair, but ageism, while illegal, is the most common form of discrimination in the United States. So if that's something that you're running into, showing that you're savvy is definitely one way to curb that. Quick especially side note. If you are running into ageism, here's a hot tip. If you do anything like fitness related, add that to your resume or to your bio. You can have a one liner in there. You can be like, I'm a winner of a triathlon. It instantly de-ages you and you give this vibe that you're so active and alert. So just a little.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a great tip, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, and when I said to you that it's so difficult when we think about putting our life into a one page, right? Either it's a bio or it's a resume, because if I was going to go looking for another job, and I always tell everybody when I grow up, I'm going to get a job because I don't think I have a job. But I would have I've had so many different types of careers in my life. Mm-hmm. I can't list them all. It would be like silly, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah. So it's okay to have a two-page resume after you have like 5 to 8 years of experience, because when you have a slightly longer resume, it helps you more with these online systems because they're looking for keywords. And if you're trying to cram everything into one space, and let's say you have 20 years of experience, and those 20 years, let's say you've had like 6 jobs, which is pretty typical, you're not going to be able to get 6 jobs on one paper while getting all of the content in properly. So having a 2-page resume is a must if you are interested in a higher leadership position, because if you just have a 1-pager, you're then giving the impression that this person hasn't achieved anything. So it's now the norm to use a 2-page resume if you have more than 5 to 8 years of experience. It's still okay to use a 1-page resume if you have more. If you feel like, you know what, no, just my last couple of jobs are the most relevant and I only want to talk about that, that's totally fine as well. But how you actually go about doing that and making sure you are as, you know, concise as possible is focusing on just what the reader wants. So if you've had a lot of careers, you've had a lot of successes, think about your first few jobs. Are they really super relevant to the reader? Is what you did there going to be really making the case for why you should be hired? If not, you can either remove them or you can literally summarize them into one line. Like, earlier experience includes marketing analyst at Career Tuners, comma, whatever. You know, you can make it as short as possible. Going back only 15 years is best practice, and everything beyond that you can cut off. Obviously, if you're aiming for like a CEO position, showing that you have 20 years of experience is better because you're showing that you're like a veteran of that industry, right?
Right, right. Right. As long as it's the same industry, right? Because you don't want to put in, I delivered paper when I was a boy, or, you know, right. I sold Girl right. Scout cookies when I was a young lady. So unless you're into sales and it says, you know, I did show that I used to sell when I was young.
Yeah, I think it's really cute. Like if I saw a bio that was like, I started selling when I was six, I'd be like, wow, that's really adorable and impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to listen. My first job was when I was 10 years old, but I don't put that on my resume. Right. I can tell you that if I had to find my resume, it probably would be with my attaché, which I don't use.
Right.
You know, that old briefcase.
Right. Right.
I it's like, I have like five of them and I'm like, wow, what am I doing with these? I should just give them to somebody. So I'm waiting for a young person to say, hey, I need a suit.
I'll take something one.
Like a suitcase or a briefcase. And like, I got it for you. But I haven't had somebody say that to me because I think even young people don't believe that unless you're a lawyer, right? You're going to go to court. You have a briefcase. But most young people going into certain types of jobs don't even consider that. But when I used to go to work, when I was in my 20s, that was the thing. You wore your suit. You had a, you know, because you had to look important.
Right? Yeah.
Always, you know, different suits. I donated all my suits when I left that industry.
Oh.
I had like 14 suits because I could not wear the same suit every day. Right.
Right.
And so I donated it all. And then later on, I said, hey, you know what? I need a suit. Oh, man, I got to go buy some now. But when we think about also, and when I talked about suits, I was getting to the part of how do you show up to an interview? Because I've had people show up for interviews. I was hiring somebody for an instructor position. And the gentleman came in. I actually hired him. He came in his military dress. He came in as he was a Marine. He came in looking so sharp. And I said, wow, he truly, not only was I grateful that he served our country, but he truly showed that he has the, maybe he didn't have a regular suit, but he wore his best.
Yeah.
To be there with me.
Definitely.
And he was very polished and he did. Can I tell you, I wish that guy still worked for me.
Wow.
Yeah. So unfortunately, and this is the crazy part about him, extremely reliable, really good. And then one day I had a big birthday party. He came to my party. He gave me two bottles of wine. Really super nice guy. I never saw him after that.
What happened to him?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know. So then later on, somebody who knew him and I said, hey, what happened? And she goes, oh, he had a girlfriend that drove him nuts. I said, what? Is he alive?
She goes,
yes. He goes, his life went upside down because of
her. My God.
I was like,
wow. He had a breakdown?
I don't know. But you know, such, he was an amazing, amazing human being. And unfortunately, somebody took the better part of him out. Yeah, it was sad. It was so sad.
That is so sad.
He was great. He was really good, you know. But hey, what can you say?
Surround yourself with good people, guys. please don't get into toxic relationships.
Yeah, they can definitely harm you in so many ways.
For sure.
He had a great job with me. You know, he was making really good money with me. And one of the things for me is, it was not only was it commission-based, but he was a salaried. And because of the type of work he was doing for me, he was making extra every month. And he was doing well. And then, boom, gone. And I was like, oh, man, to replace him took a little distance for me to try to, like, interview. And the interview process, can I tell you? Can we talk about some interviewing?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to tell you some nightmares that I had.
Let's go for it. I'll tell you some too.
Yeah, I think this is good because it'll help someone who's listening what not to do.
Sure.
So I have several businesses. One of them is a martial arts and fitness facility. I don't know if I was able to or not, but I put it anyway. No smoking.
Okay.
On the thing. I don't know if I was legal or not legal. I'm just like, we're a fitness facility. Mm-hmm. I don't want somebody who smells of cigarettes to coming in and you're going to be at my front desk.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a woman who's coming in and I see her smoking in the parking lot, throws out the cigarette. Not only does she litter, right? And then she sprays her mouth and then she sprays her body like that.
With the same spray?
No, different spray. So yeah, that would be funny. So then she comes in and she was really well-dressed, everything else. But immediately I knew I was going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to go any further with this interview.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to get in trouble for it, but I kind of told her that the position already had been filled.
Mm.
Just because she did not fit the criteria. And she also already lied when I spoke to her on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So can I trust her if she already lied to me? And then I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had different people who told me, and the job was for certain days, right? All these days you have to be here. Well, I can't come because I have to take care of the horse. Or I have to, and I'm like, you did read the information of what times we need you.
Right.
Well, on certain days I could, but I might be late because, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then on and on, and I kept having all, and it was like a comedy every time. I literally interviewed probably 40 people before I hired one person, and everybody kept coming with different excuses of why this and why that. Well, one girl came in her pajamas, and I was like, this is not how I need you. I said, you're representing my company.
Right.
Oh, you know, and then believe it or not, fine, I didn't hire her. Then I had another girl who came in, really nicely dressed. And I said to her, this is the outfit. This is the type of outfit you need to wear. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't need, you know, cleavage showing. I need nice, you know, business casual.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, business casual. I said, no jeans.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you can be nice blouse, nice slacks. You want to wear a skirt? That's fine. She did that for about 3 weeks. And then she started coming in sweats.
Oh. Like,
whoa. So I talked to her and then talked to her and then talked to her. And I finally had to say to her, I said, look, we've had a few conversations, right? Yes. I said, but you're not listening. I said, mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to let you go.
Oh.
And she's like, I get it. I understand. I'm like, did you like working here? I loved it. I said, all I asked you to do was do business casual. Mm-hmm. I didn't even ask you to dress up, just business casual. So I've had so many different situations like that where people, they have an idea of what they want,
mm-hmm.
which is great. I think we all should have that. But then also you have to meet the expectations of your employer, right?
Right.
I have more, but I don't want to keep going on and on. Let's hear some of yours. I'd love to hear.
Sure. So I had one where I pay everyone for any like interview assignments that I want them to do. Like I'll say, you know, I'll estimate how many hours it's going to take and put an hourly rate on it and give them something. I was recently hiring a marketing manager. And I had a couple of interviews and I was like, this is the assignment. Please come prepared. Please share your banking information. I'll make sure you're compensated for your time, blah, blah, blah. Here's the rate I'm compensating you at. Here are the details of the assignment. This girl like clearly did not do the assignment. And then I was like, oh, it was pretty clearly spelled out in the email. And she just hung up. Like, this was an online interview. And she was just like, she froze and then she hung up. And like, I never heard from her again. And I was like, dude, you're so talented. You could have just said something. Like, hanging up is the worst possible thing you could have done.
Right.
I had this other gentleman for the same role. I'm just remembering the recent stuff because it's there in my memory. But I was like, yeah, so I'm hiring for a marketing manager. Can you tell me about your experience? And he was telling me about all of these like illegal marketing activities that he was doing. I was like, this is not FTC compliant. What are you talking about? He was like, yeah, but it was really good experience because it allowed me to learn blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, this is not okay.
Wow.
Yeah, just crazy stuff like that. I'm generally like a very forgiving interviewer because as an interview coach, I know I come across as very intimidating just being on the other side of the desk. And also I feel like I have kind of a forceful personality unintentionally. I try to soften it a lot, but when I sense someone is being nervous, I always tell them like, hey, it's okay. Like, being nervous is very normal. I also get really nervous when I go to interviews. If you're nervous and you need 5 minutes, let's do that. Or I crack a joke. I've hired a woman who the first time we had an interview, I heard her baby crying in the background nonstop. And I was quite annoyed, but she was like, can we please reschedule? And I was like, I guess. Like, I was like very annoyed with that, but she went on to really impressing me later. And her baby's really cute now. She's like three. She has a head of curly hair. She's really sassy. I love that family. So I'm really glad that I gave her a chance. But people will tell you, like, you know, they'll be very transparent about their capabilities. I had a woman write me like this almost, I don't know, it was so weird. Like, I interviewed her and she's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. This is so exciting. And like, I'm so nervous. Please tell me I didn't mess up. And like a lot of like seeking validation. And I was like, dude, you're going to be in a customer facing role. Like, if you're going to talk like that to me, how are you going to talk to our customers?
Right.
So that was an interesting experience. So there's a lot of stuff like that. You really have to put a filter on what you're thinking and how you're presenting yourself.
So let me ask you, have you had a lot of people interview or set up an interview and just not show up? Because I get that a lot.
It's happened a couple of times. Yeah. Recently, I was hiring for a sales role where it happened. And I think the excuse was legitimate. But eventually, it didn't end up working out anyway. It doesn't happen to me like that often. Is it because it's like, are you always doing in-person interviews?
Yeah.
Okay. I think with online interviews, it's a little bit easier because you get so many reminders to show up, you know, because the tool takes care of it for you. So I think somehow it's a little bit easier. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to get that vibe from the person, an in-person vibe, you know, when I do interviews.
Absolutely. Somebody. That's really important, you know,
for me, because it's, if it was not a in-person job, then that'd be different. Yeah, then we could do virtual, not a big deal. But when it comes to, you're going to be, this is your role and you're going to be dealing with customers.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see your mannerisms. For example, there was a girl that came in and amazing girl. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to her. And I said, let me show you around. I talked to her for a little bit. And I said, let's just take a walk. As we're walking, people are walking past us. And she's like, how are you? How's everything? Everything okay? She was beyond friendly. And she was like, have a great day. Thanks for coming here. And I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't hire you yet. So by the time I finished walking with her, I said, what day do you want to start? Because, and then, can I tell you, that never went away, ever. And what wound up happening is later on I found out that she, like you, moved a lot. So at one point I was like, you think the FBI is looking for her? Right? But it was a joke, right? Because anytime we took pictures, she would kind of like do this and like, you know, kind of like.
She was a time traveler.
Yeah. So I'm like, huh. But then actually she was in some pictures. So I'm like, okay, maybe not. And then one day she came and she goes, I have to give you my notice.
Hmm.
And I'm like, oh, what? Why? She goes, oh, I'm moving again. And I'm like, where are you moving to? Oh, I don't know yet.
Wow.
So I was like, wow. So I've had some really great people work for me and they're gone.
Right.
And I'm like, wow. And it wasn't the money. She didn't say the money was no good. She was like, no, I'm just moving out of state.
Mm-hmm.
And so later on, I kept in touch with her because I thought she was great. Her personality was great. And what she did was great. And so we actually kept in touch. And what I later found out is that she only stayed at a job. I did not know that. And that's probably a question I should have asked.
Mm-hmm.
No longer than a year at any job.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a young lady. And I would be surprised if she was anywhere for long.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she was a drifter, if you will.
Yeah,
and she was not wanted by the FBI because I have friends who are in the FBI.
I think if you're that kind of person where you really need to move around and but you still want that stability in terms of like employment, consulting gigs are so great because you're like flying around all the time. You're working with a different client every time. A lot of people in IT do that, right? They're or like at the big four consulting firms where they travel to from one client to the other, they work with them, stay at like a nice hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Could be one job opportunity.
I also found out she's a chef, so she anywhere she goes, she'll go find her family and she'll cook for them.
Aww.
She'll cook them for the week, and then that's it. Then she's like, "Okay, I'm out. I got to go find a different family to go cook for."
No,
and yes,
yeah, an interesting person.
Very, very, but that's what made her unique, you know.
Right.
So one of the things that I always tell people is like, dress to impress,
mm-hmm.
and even. If it's not required, sometimes dress a little bit higher, right? Like mm-hmm. a little higher level, right? If they say dress casual, dress business. I mean, right. That's my thought, right?
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they say that you want to dress like one level higher than whatever their dress code is. If they say casual, business casual. If they say business casual, you want to do a little bit business. If they say business, then wear your best.
Yes.
But I think looking at their website to see what kind of, you know, who they've showcased and their about page and stuff like that and kind of emulating some of their clothes can really work. This is really challenging for a lot of people who maybe don't have a lot of options when it comes to their wardrobe. If you're breaking into a new industry or if you're a young professional and you don't really have the money to invest in 14 suits, mm-hmm. you know, this is something
you buy one at a time.
Yeah. This is something that you know, it can definitely be something you feel self-conscious about, but that success will come to you. This is just, you know, like Sifu said, you can build your wardrobe up one suit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of options for cost-effective and pocket-friendly clothing options if you need to look your best for an interview. And especially for women, you know, like our bodies change all the time. We'll buy something and then it won't fit a year later. It's really challenging with our hormonal changes and giving birth and all of that. So I understand how a lot of this can feel like, oh man, that's one more thing I gotta do to get a job. Like, why can't it just be about my capabilities? Like, I'm in tech, like doesn't matter what I wear. I know, I get it. Unfortunately, this is the system and it's going to take a lot of time to dismantle the system. And the best way to dismantle the system is to economically empower yourself by playing the rules for a little while. And then when you're higher up and when you're making the rules, you can make it a little bit more friendly to whoever you'd like to serve. So that's my thought process. Don't just have a lot of anger towards, you know, these things. Focus on the things you can control. Because this is something I hear a lot about. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I saw recently was how to get 14 outfits for men, business outfits, out of like one jacket.
I saw that video. Yeah.
Right? And I thought that was pretty smart. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. But when I wore suits, it was different full suits, right. Every time. But you can be economical. You can be smart. I enjoyed wearing my suits, mm-hmm. I enjoyed them. That's why I would like, for me, I'm one of those men that like clothes shopping. When I was married, if my wife said, oh, we're going clothes shopping, I'm like, woohoo. Most men are like, oh no, I don't want to go
clothes shopping. I hate clothes shopping.
Do you? My son is the same way. He loves going. Now, I have two boys, right? One boy can go and spend hours in a clothing store. My other son is like, why do we have to go? Can't you just pick something up for me?
Right.
So, and he doesn't want to go any clothes shopping at all. And the other one wants to stay. I said, you should think about going into the clothing garment, industry, because you love clothing so much. But when we think about dressing up and showing up, it's also, I've had so many people in front of me where I'm asking them to be a public figure, mm-hmm. right? They have to represent my company. They have to go to certain functions because I can't not. That's how I duplicate myself. So I have several people that go to different functions representing my company, but they have to be able to communicate. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm going to put up your website here, right? Sure. It is careertuners.com/podcast. What is podcast?
So that's a link you can go to if you want some of my awesome free resources. I just updated them for 2023. Yes. The free resume cheat sheet that I have has a case study of someone who was able to double their initial offer. Mm-hmm. The LinkedIn cheat sheet that I have, that profile was built based on someone who was able to get a $323,000 per year job. And then I have a bunch of other great free resources on there, like a cover letter template that you just have to like put your stuff in. I have what I like to call the only networking template you'll ever need. And today I'm going to be adding an email template that you can use to counter a lowball salary offer. Because that's something I think we run into a lot. Right. Where you go into a job expecting some figure and it's like 20% less and you're like, what? So that email will show you how to come on top of those discussions. Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up because here's the thing, right? I've been seeing a lot of things on LinkedIn about disclosing a salary before mm-hmm. you go to a job. Because a lot of people say, I would never have gone on this interview, wasted my time and my energy to that job when they were going to pay me $30,000 less than what I was looking for.
Right.
If that's all, if their ceiling was $30,000 below what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Well, they could have taken that time to gone to a different interview whose ceiling was meeting theirs. So. Right. Is that a law that's passing throughout the states or is that just in certain places?
I think it's passing in certain states, but the people are, they're working around it by having a range like 20,000 to 500,000 on their mm-hmm. job description. And it's like, dude, what's the point of having a range? But I mean, it is very frustrating to have to take time off to sometimes do a bunch of homework because a lot mm-hmm. of these interviews are asking for that, like, hey, present a case study or do this and that. And it is very, very frustrating. To people who are experiencing that, I would recommend looking at Glassdoor reviews. Glassdoor has a section where they talk about interviews. Take those reviews with a grain of salt. Sometimes people write angry reviews because they got rejected. Right. Sometimes people are not paid, but they're coerced by their employer to write positive reviews. So just take those with a pinch of salt. And, we're all really smart. We know how things work online. We're all very skeptical. So read those reviews with a skeptical frame of mind and prioritize those applications where you're getting good vibes, right? where you have seen on Glassdoor that people are reporting generally higher salaries and stuff like that. So that's one of the steps you can do. The second step is if you've had that experience and you're like, wow, they just wasted a bunch of my time, try mentally reframing that to, hey, I got a bunch of free interview practice. Now when I'm going to go for my dream job, I'm going to be a little bit less nervous. And I know it sucks. You probably had to take time off and, you know, you probably got emotionally attached. And I get it. It's very, very frustrating. But focusing a little bit on the positive can help you go into the next one where you will get the offer and it'll be a good one with a lot more positivity and productivity.
So when I used to work in the architectural and interior design world, I used to take a day off.
That's a lot. Yeah.
But I used to set up 6 to 8 interviews. So I knew what I was doing that day. And I knew, look, even if I lost it, if I didn't get one, at least I had a chance to check them out.
That's not really like realistic nowadays with how these, oh my, I just hate how people are setting up interviews. They will
have you
do like an all day like interview in front of a panel, and they'll have you do one interview with each member of their leadership team. It's really ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Recently, I think Google, not recently, like a couple of years ago, they rolled out a policy where they're like, look, we're not going to interview someone more than 5 times. How many times are you interviewing people before? You know, so it's really annoying and frustrating. I recently went on a bunch of interviews where they interviewed me like 6 times. And I was like, this is so unnecessary. You already asked me these questions. Like, why didn't you just take notes? I get it. It is very frustrating. Yeah. But the people who really care about their employees and their HR systems, they'll take the steps to make sure that your employee experience is good. So hopefully you're able to find an employer like that. And I do think, you know, things are changing and people are... It is an employee's market, where job seekers definitely have more power and they can walk away if something gives them bad vibes. So please do that. Don't get, if something is giving you bad vibes in the interview, guess what? That's their best. It's going to be a lot worse when you actually start the job. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, no, when I used to do it, I used to go to different companies for interviews, right?
Right.
And, you know, I used to work for a company called Architemps. Mm-hmm. And they would put me in a company to work for them. And this particular company, they said they only wanted me for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then they go, can you stay another 3? Can you stay another 3? Can you stay another 3? Sure, you guys are paying me really good and you're paying the agency really good. So then they turned around and they said, you know, would you like to have a job here? Mm-hmm. I said, sure. What are you willing to pay me? Because what you're paying me now is not going to keep mm-hmm. me here. Mm-hmm. So they made me an offer that was like, I could not refuse. Mm-hmm. So then not only did they give me a good amount of money, but they had to buy my contract out mm-hmm. with Architemps.
Let me ask you a question. Sure. You've had a lot of high paying jobs and you've been a highly sought out employer. What do you think you do differently that others can emulate to have that image to employers?
My actions and my habits.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Of course. So when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. Mm-hmm. I show up earlier than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And if I needed to, I would stay later. Mm-hmm. And I would focus. If I needed to work through lunch, I would work through lunch. Mm-hmm. So I was there for a purpose. I was not one of the people, obviously I don't smoke, so I was not taking cigarette breaks like a lot of my other, back in the day when I was working in offices, people would smoke. They would go outside or go in the area and have a cigarette and have a coffee break. I wasn't that. You'd always find me doing what I said I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And when somebody wanted a deadline and it was by 4 o'clock, I'd have it done by 2. Mm-hmm. And I'll go, what's next? Mm-hmm. What's next? And they're like, man, he's hungry. And then all of a sudden, I would take a higher role position from somebody who was at the company for many more years, and they were waiting for that position. I got promoted because somebody saw the value that I brought.
Absolutely.
And later on, when I was working with this particular person, who now I was their boss, they didn't like it. And they didn't like me at all because I was, and this is the company that hired me,
right?
That bought my contract from Architemps. Mm-hmm. And then what wound up happening is not only was I a floater, if you will, now I had a full-time position here. Mm-hmm. And now I was this person's boss.
Right.
And I was a bunch of people's bosses. So what wound up happening is I told her, this is the project we're working on. This is what I need done. Mm-hmm. She huffed and puffed and she wanted to go do it. She brought it back and goes, here. And I said, okay. I had to check her work because I still have to answer to someone else. Mm-hmm. So I read the way we do it in architect. When I was working, we used to redline everything. Mm-hmm. So we give it back. Mm-hmm. And I gave her redline pages and pages of all these drawings. And she was angry. And I said, this is what needs to be done. I said it as nicely as I could. I was super nice to her. And then she brought it back. Here it is. It's all done. And I said, okay. I redlined it again and gave it back to her. And I said, look, I said, these are the things that have to be done. I said, this is, if we don't take care of it now and we hand this in, we both may lose our jobs.
Right.
I said, so I'm protecting me, but I'm protecting you. Mm-hmm. So why don't we, if you need some help, I'm very fast at doing these things. If you needed a little extra help, let me know. I'm there for you. Mm-hmm. I said, let's be a team. I said, I understand you were looking for this position before I even got here. You've been here 4 years longer than I have. Mm-hmm. I get that. I said, but it is what it is. I said, and we can make it a great experience, or we can keep going the same way, where I'll just keep redlining your work, and it's not going to look good for you in the long run. I said, so finally she gave in, and we worked, and we had other projects together, and it worked out okay. I was still always her boss anyway.
And so how was the relationship like later? Was it better?
It was okay. Yeah.
It was okay.
We weren't friends, but it was a workable relationship.
So do you think that direct approach is always advisable? Like when you've bruised someone's ego by taking the promotion they were waiting for, do you think being direct with them, like, hey, I know I took your job. Do you think that's always the best approach? Or do you think that an indirect approach could potentially also be used? What do you think?
For me, I'd rather be super honest.
Okay, me too.
and so I'm going to say, look, I understand that this was the position you wanted, but it is what it is. Can we make the best of it?
Hmm.
And I was super nice to her and the whole time. And the working relationship was fine. It was good after I made that comment. You know, the first time she was, I can tell she was angry. She was angry. After that, she didn't have anger anymore. Mm-hmm. She knew that I was a team player and I wanted her on the team. And I wanted us to fully be functional as a team. Because I said, listen, I value what you do. So I brought in all her good traits as well. I didn't just knock her down and go, I got your job, kind of nonsense, because that's not who I am. And I lead with my heart. Anytime when I do anything, I'm like, hey, you know what? We have something to take care of. Let's see what's the best way. How can we do it better? Let's team up.
So for me, that's how I do it. And I think assessing someone's strengths and having a candid comp, this is what I do every time someone joins my team, as I have them take a high five test. It tells you what their biggest strengths are. And sometimes I'll hire somebody for like a direct contributor role, but one of their strengths is coach. And I'm like, do you really think that you have to be a coach at your job? And would you leave this job if that coaching need is not fulfilled in the next 2 years or whatever? And if they're like, yeah, I really want a manager position, I figure out how to fulfill that strength and build a role around what their strengths are so that they're feeling satisfied. And I think the approach that you shared is really good because, yeah, she was probably like feeling really hurt and you built her back up. You're like, this is a weakness, yes, but I can help you with it. And here are all of the strengths that I really need you for. And I'm sure she left that discussion feeling a little hurt, but, you know, empowered as well. I just want to plug a quick resource really quickly. You said that you worked with a lot of focus. You didn't take cigarette breaks and all of that. That's really difficult to do when you're working from home and you're working online. And one of the tools I really like is called the Pareto timer. If you're using Windows, you can go to the Pareto. Windows store. It's a little app that you just click. Sorry, it's Pomodoro timer. It's a Pareto timer. But what am I saying? No. Pareto is the 80-20 rule. Sorry, I'm getting a little confused. It's called a Pomodoro timer. The Pomodoro technique basically entails that you work for 25 minutes, you take a 5-minute break, and then you work for 25 minutes, and then you work in the sprint for about 4 hours, and then you can take a break. So this one you can set differently. I tend to get like kind of in like this hyper focus thing, so I tend to set it for like 55 minutes, and then I'll just do like a few of those, and then I'll take a longer break. So it's very flexible. I really love this tool. I recommend it to all of my teammates that are having a hard time focusing because that gratification of knowing that that break is coming does keep you focused. Yeah. So I recommend that. And I also recommend baking in artificial deadlines when there aren't any. So if you tell a client that they can expect something in 3 days, have an internal deadline of like 2 days, or tell the deadline you're going to deliver it in 2 days and push yourself. Because I feel like if I give someone a week, they'll take the full week. But if I give them an hour, they'll do something that's quite usable in just an hour as well. And if you can like really emotionally manipulate yourself like that, it's great. You can get a lot done.
Yeah, so. You have to. Well, you asked me why was I able to ask for so much more money than some of my peers. It's because of, and I told you, my habits and my actions.
Right.
Right. And I have a work ethic, like it's just crazy work ethic. I love, and even though I say, and I kid around that when I grow up, I'm going to get a job, right? Because I have a passion for what I do. I really, really do. I accomplish more. Listen, I was at the gym this morning at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. I was at my gym that I own. And I did some videotapes and I put it up on LinkedIn and Facebook and all that. Then I went to a different gym to do a different workout. And then I had mini breakfasts in between. So I had on my way to the gym, I had a peach. And then on my way to my other gym, I had an apple. Then when I got home 2 hours later, I had oatmeal with some green tea. So it's all intentional. Everything I do has to have an intention. Then I knew that I had a show at 8:30. And so everything I've been doing has been on the clock. Everything is calendared. Mm-hmm. Even when I worked for other people, right? I haven't worked for someone, probably going on 29 years now. Mm-hmm. So I've been in my own business for about that long. And I have different kinds of businesses. But when I worked for other people, I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. I always looked at a deadline as like, oh, I got to beat that. Mm-hmm. They want it at 4? I'm going to have it earlier. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I always challenge myself. Mm-hmm. Because if I said, oh, 4 o'clock, it's going to be okay. I'm just going to hang out, relax. So I never pushed. Mm-hmm. If I went that way, I'd be like everybody else.
Oh, I'll give you a tip that I shared with somebody. I was doing leadership coaching for somebody and they're working from home and they're unmarried and single. And they're like, I don't have anything outside of work. So I'm working 16-hour days because I'm like, I don't have anything else. But it was like an 8-hour day, but they were like working a couple hours, taking a break. And, you know, and they were like, I need to just get everything done. And I said, well, what do you do outside of work? And she was like, I'm in Toastmasters. And I said, this Saturday, you're going to do a speech in Toastmasters. So finish your work in 8 hours, and then you are going to write your speech for 1 hour every day until it's done by Saturday. So having an artificial deadline it's so hard to be like, the deadline's 4, but I'm going to get this done by 2. Well, guess what? There's going to be something on TV at 2. So motivate yourself with something fun. You can be like, I'm going to finish this at 2, and then I'm going to go watch Wednesday on Netflix or whatever, and have a good time, and bake your fun into your calendar too, because that really can push you to getting everything done. If you have children, you know, you already have a deadline. You're like, okay, my kids are going to be home at 3. I need to make sure all of this is done, so I'm saving the easy email stuff for after they go to sleep. Use that. Use those. And if you don't have that, sign up for a class or sign up for a date with a friend, or, you know, like make a plan that, okay, at 4 o'clock, I have an alarm. As soon as I hit 4, I'm going to go out and just sit by the pond and watch the ducks. Do something that refreshes you and makes you feel good. And the other thing, Sifu, I think you're so passionate about your work. And I was speaking to a client recently who was able to really excel after he purchased our services, but way beyond, you know, the scope of our service. So I said, what was it that really brought your success? And he said, I did something, there was something, a problem at work that was so interesting and fun for me to solve that I would wake up genuinely excited to go to work. And if that's not happening for you, if you're not genuinely excited to go to work, and if you're not like, man, this is going to be so much fun when I crack this, figure out how you can sign up for a project that fulfills that. You know, figure out what it is that you really look for. Maybe take like a self-assessment, like a DISC assessment, or like a high five test. That's my favorite because it's so quick and it's very, very accurate in my opinion. And think about which part of your needs, you know, your spiritual needs are not being fulfilled at work. Do you really need to mentor somebody? Do you need to feel like you're always learning something new? If so, have an honest conversation with your boss to restructure your role around what would fulfill you. And you'll wake up excited to go to work, and you will have the same kind of, because I mean, I listen to Sifu and I'm like, oh my God, this guy's crazy. Like, he has so much motivation. Well, you can manage that and achieve the same thing. Kind of artificially, you can fake it until you make it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that you brought up earlier is when we think about stepping into that role, right? Mm-hmm. That you applied for,
right?
And then sometimes one of the things that I tell the people that I hire is you have to want to be here,
right?
If you don't want to be here, then you know what? I'd rather you work somewhere else.
Absolutely.
That you're happy. If you're not happy, are you happy with the money, right? That's one. Most people, money's important. You got to pay your bills. You got to, you know, you got to enjoy life. So you do need money. Second, are you content with your actions, what you're doing every day? Are you having that family time that you need? Even if you are a single person, family time may be a friend,
right?
A social activities. So this is going to fulfill your whole life. And you talked about spiritual, right? Are you spiritually happy? If not, find it. So find all these things so that there is a balance in your life. Okay. One of the things that I believe everybody as a child always says what's on their mind,
right?
Always. And then and they say some of the fun, I love listening to kids because they say the funniest things always, and they'll tell you exactly what's on their mind until somebody tells them, "Ooh, don't say that," right? So a lot of times people quiet the minds of young people. Don't say that, don't talk. You should be seen, not heard. Those are things that hurt people along the way. And then you talked about asking as well, right? When we go to a job interview, we need to ask for what we want. Mm-hmm. We need to ask for what the company is going to do for you. And then you need to also let them know what your strengths are that you can do for them, so that there is that collaboration between both of you, right? Because right. If one person wants one thing and the other person wants another and they don't mesh, you're going to have this nonsense going on. You guys are going to crash and it's no good. You got to actually bond together with your company. And like I said, when I work for other people, I made their business my business.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be mine. Otherwise, I could not give myself to it. And I would do a terrible job. I wouldn't care. I would be, just taking my breaks. Even if I didn't smoke, I would make believe. I would do all these things.
Candy cigarettes.
I would just have one of those candy cigarettes. Remember those back in? I'd have one of those, fake it out. But no, I didn't do that. Right?
Your boss comes like, excuse me? What are you doing?
They're like, why is that guy smoking and the cigarette doesn't go down? Oh, it's one of those cigarettes. Right? But I didn't do any of that because whatever company I work for is because I wanted to be there.
Right.
And it shows, because to get promoted, to get that company to even buy my contract out from another company, it showed them the value that I brought for, right? That I cared. That's what most companies want. They want to hire somebody that cares. Listen, if I hire somebody to sweep my floors and they're not whistling, they're the wrong person.
Absolutely.
They're the wrong. They should be whistling when they're sweeping the floors or cleaning my windows. Mm-hmm. If they're not, they need to get a different job. I need somebody who's going to whistle, who's going to be happy at their job. When I'm cleaning my own floors, I'm happy doing it because the benefit of a clean space is going to give everybody who walks into it that good feeling.
Absolutely.
I have a martial arts school. And if you've been to a martial arts school, my school is 10,000 square feet.
Mm.
That's a big space to keep clean.
Mm.
That's one of the biggest comments people go, my gosh, this place is so clean. Why? Because I value my customers, mm-hmm. right? You go to my wood shop, everything has its place. Everything, with no matter what I'm doing, I'm using a calendar. Things have to work.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to work together. One of the biggest things I tell people, because we were told to be quiet when we were younger.
Right.
Now it's time to speak up. And I think one of the most important things that somebody needs to learn, it doesn't matter if you're in IT or anywhere else, we need to ask the questions, but we need to do it in a way that's going to get someone to really listen and pay attention to us. And that's through public speaking, right?
Yes. Yes. I think the art of having a conversation is it's very difficult for people. A lot of these things, like, you have to know yourself. So I'm saying, like, your spiritual needs aren't being fulfilled at your job. I'm not talking in a religious sense. I'm not a religious person. But when you're doing your job, what part of your job is crushing your spirit? If you're looking at emails every single day and you're like, oh my God, I cannot look at another customer service email. Maybe it's because you're the kind of person that needs a diverse role, a lot of learning. You know, what is it that is really bothering you about whatever's bothering you about your work? What are you dreading? Mm. And how can you turn that into something that's a little bit more, exciting? And a lot of this stuff, it doesn't require like a dramatic role change, right? Sometimes it just requires an honest conversation with your boss. Like, hey, I really love teaching and mentoring, and I would love to coach maybe anybody new that you're hiring. I'd love to onboard them. And you'll wake up excited because you're like, yes, I get to teach somebody. I get to show them the ropes, and you're feeling fulfilled. Or maybe, if you're the kind of person that dreads monotony, like I do, you can just, ask your boss to assign special projects to you and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And if you're already a leader, you can structure your own role. So figure out what makes you tick. If you're the kind of manager that's always putting out fires, why? What needs to change in order for the team that you're leading to be a little bit more stable? And then what can you fill that time with so that you're feeling so excited to actually get up and go into work?
That is an important thing, right? To be excited to go to work. So Daniel, our good friend, says you guys rock, right? Thank you.
Daniel rocks.
He Daniel, does rock.
Yeah. He's the OG.
Yes. And he's definitely an expert, when it comes to what he does with LinkedIn and so forth. I also want to give a shout out to some people who did log in and take a listen to us, is Guerrera, Juco, and Mahi Joa, and Kazi my good friend Kazi from Texas, and Don Lewis, right? When we think about incorporating ourselves into a business atmosphere, mm-hmm. we also have to think about, and you talked about the woman who 16 hours and so forth. We also have to think about the other aspects of our lives. So when we're at work, we're at work. When we're home, we're home. And we should really divide, you know, like sometimes people take work home and then they're not spending family or quality time with somebody. So what I always say to somebody is, if you're going to take work home, have a place at home that that work is in, even if you have to make a closet and put yourself in the closet, but then you leave that closet and that stays. So now you know that if you took work home, it only gets done in the closet or in that particular spare bedroom or in that walk-in closet. I mean, I'm not talking about a closet, you know, where you can't fit in.
Like Harry Potter under the cover.
That you can fit in, right? But so when we think about living a life, it should not be work, 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 work. It should be, you have to have time to enjoy it because life is extremely, extremely short.
Yeah. And when you are like, let's say you do have to take work home. Sometimes it happens, right? Try to spend at least 30 minutes of your day doing something that gives you joy. So you go back to that work feeling refreshed. If you have a family, it may mean spending time with your family. If you are, you know, living alone, maybe you have a hobby that really resets you. So bake that into your schedule too.
Yeah. Scheduling everything.
Yes. Right?
Like I said, my schedule is solid, but I do leave room for things that come up. Right. And that's being smart with your schedule. Some things you just, you know, you can't. I'm scheduling something for the end of, now it's going to be the end of June. It was going to be the beginning of June. But I forgot that I have a wedding I already said yes to. Not mine. Somebody else's. Right. So I'm going to somebody's wedding, but now I was going to plan this big event in New York, and now it's going to be towards the end of June, right? So, Fatima, I would love for you to be part of my event in June. I'll send you the dates. Everybody listening, it's going to be at the end of June. We're going to have a big event with amazing coaches, and it's going to be people from all over the world coming. I already have some people committed. Coming from the UK, from Australia, from Italy, Singapore, from the US. So it's going to be amazing, amazing. And we're going to have a blast. But it's also going to be a place where you have to bring a notebook, a blank notebook, because there's going to be so much information. And you're going to get to meet authors and people who teach you how to do things. Bring your resume. Fatima will help you with that. She's going to be on there. She's going to help you guys out and reach out, right? Fatima, I got to tell you, it was a pleasure talking to you today. And I am so glad that you and I are now connected. Now we have to be connected.
Yes. Right?
Cool. And any last words of advice that you can give someone before we head off?
You know, I give a lot of advice on my email list. Every day I share a fun story and a tip. Sometimes it's more tip than fun story. But if you're stressed out about your job search, if you are struggling with, you know, talking to your boss and stuff like that, you should definitely sign up at careertuners.com/podcast. Yesterday I wrote two emails. The one that I got sent yesterday was advice on how to talk about how to talk about some of the red flags in your resume, like employment gaps and career changes in a way that's strategic. The email that's going to go out in a couple of days is going to be how to do the same in your interviews. So I, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I write. I love writing. I love teaching people how to take a look at this big complicated system and still come out on top. So you can sign up for my emails like that. And last piece of advice is always try to understand who it is that you're speaking to and make sure that your message resonates with them. You don't have to share your entire portfolio in your resume, because your resume is just there for you to get a conversation with them. And then you can share the rest of your story then. So yeah, just understand your audience and speak to them accordingly.
Yeah. You know, even though I'm not looking for a job, I'm going to go sign up.
You love my stories. Yes. If you want to know more about my childhood and all of the traveling that I did, the stories are usually from that.
I suggest everybody sign up, whether you're looking for a job or not. I'm sure, listen, you never know. You never know when opportunity will present itself and they're going to say, hey, where's your resume? And you go, oh, I don't have it. So keep it sharp, right? Keep that pencil sharp too.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.